just imagine a mid-30s software guy in corporate America living in the suburbs of Baltimore, soon to be dad, that created a podcast. Well, get excited. I know that sounds exhilarating because that's me and this is my podcast. Stay tuned. Hello, this is Jason here, and welcome to episode number one of my podcast. Wow, you actually found it, and I must admit, I was not expecting such the crowd and the cheers for episode number one. But I have it, so great, let's use it. So what is this podcast all about? Well, first, a little disclaimer. All opinions are my own. They don't represent anyone I work for, with, I represent, I'm associated with, whatsoever. So let's start off with, you know, who am I? Who the heck is Jams.net? Well, Jams.net was a domain I purchased in 1997. I am a web developer guy by trade. And my initials were Jam, and I thought I was being really edgy and ironic by adding a Z. I'm Jams. So I bought Jams.net, which is a nice four-letter domain, and I started a web development career that I still do today. During the day, I work at a big software company selling different digital media solutions. So podcasting is not something I claim to be an expert at. It's not even something I think I might be good at. However, I think the content of the podcast, doing the best I can to portray the content, is going to be really good. I have a good corporate America job. I have a unique perspective in digital marketing, and I'm going to share some of those topics. My wife and I also invest in real estate quite a bit. But on top of all that, I just like to have fun, lots of fun hobbies, like to do business, but also like to make sure it's a good mixture of both. So my hope is on this podcast to cover some general lifestyle topics. Maybe you might poke fun at me, maybe you might enjoy them, maybe you can relate, but we won't know till we try. I also want to have a little around town segment each episode, specifically focused in the Baltimore and suburbs of Baltimore. Maybe it's topics about my O's. Just so you know, I was an O's fan my entire life. That was before the Nationals were in D.C. So when I was living in Virginia, the O's are who I followed. So it's kind of cool that I'm living in Baltimore now with a team that I was rooting for growing up. We'll also talk a little bit about some very specific subjects. On this episode today, I'm going to cover cryptocurrency and why Airbnb, and then I'll kind of wrap it up. But what can you expect from a frequency standpoint on this podcast? Well, to be quite honest, probably no more than once a month, unless I have a really unique topic that I want to cover. And then it might be, an episode or two extra per month. I don't have tons and tons of time. I don't expect you to either. So I'm going to try to keep these podcasts within about a 25-minute window, and I hope that will give you some really good content in that frequency of a new release every month or so. So just getting back to about me a little bit, like I say, I started as a web developer. I've been working for a big software company for a long time. Some of my hobbies include anywhere from investing in real estate, which, believe it or not, is a hobby. It could be backyard chickens that my wife and I have, honeybees that we have, lots of little different kind of homesteading activities that I enjoy. I also am addicted to Land Rovers. I bought a Land Rover finally, and that turned into three. If you know Land Rovers, you can get old ones pretty cheap because they have lots of issues. New ones, like my wife has, can be a little more expensive, obviously. But in high school, my dream car was a Land Rover. In fact, when I first met my wife, she was a big car enthusiast. She said, "Hey, what kind of car do you want?" At the time, I was a GM guy, and I still am a GM guy. They have their place. But I really like the utilitarian aspects of what a Range Rover can do. And I told her, I want a Range Rover Sport, black on black, right? And it took me a lot of time to get that. But 2 years ago, we bought one, a Land Rover Range Rover full size. It was a 2010. So at the time, it was, I guess, 5 years old. And it was an awesome truck, and we really love it. And then my wife, we sold her Q5, and we bought a new 2016 Range Rover Sport. And of course, me being me, I wanted, you know, that typical drive through a creek, drive up a mountain, beat the heck up kind of truck. And I stumbled upon a 1999 Land Rover Discovery 1, the Disco, as many are called. And the Discovery 1 was the last year that I think they made them really like safari-like. Not a lot of electronics. You could do a lot of customizations to them, but they do have their issues. So I bought it. I've been working on it, fixing it up, and that's kind of one of the little hobbies that I have. So I was talking to a buddy of mine, and we were talking about podcasting and ideas, and I said, you know, I've always wanted to do a podcast, but I really don't think I have any good content. So I started listening to all the podcasts, and I said, holy shit, they don't have any good content either. But I felt like I had good enough content and a good enough chance at having fun with it and learning a new medium that I think is important to for me personally to know. So I went ahead and I'm using Adobe Audition. I think the Adobe software solutions are the best on the market. I might be biased, but I also think they give you professional level editing tools with a little bit of education you can figure out. So I got Adobe Audition loaded up. I bought a Yeti Blue mic, USB, and here I am. Podcasting episode number one. So my topics for today are going to be cryptocurrency. I spent a lot of time trying to understand what the heck cryptocurrency is, how do I use it, how do you buy and sell it, plus how do you actually buy things with it. After that, I want to spend a few moments talking about Airbnb, because if you read the news, and it's December 14th, 2017 right now, you'll see, you know, article after article about these creeps that are renting Airbnbs and putting cameras everywhere. And it's very easy to go on the internet and say, oh my God, don't ever stay in an Airbnb because of that. Well, don't you have to ask yourself, like, look at the person, look at your host you're renting it from. Like, do your due diligence. Come on. I mean, don't go to a guy that looks like he should be living in a van down by the river and expect a Ritz-Carlton experience. You get my drift. So I really, as an investor, I get a little upset when I hear people make blanket statements. And as a society, it seems like that's all we do. But I want to give my perspective on Airbnb, what I do as an owner and a landlord to tenants, what I don't offer, and why you should consider it. And I'm going to wrap up today's episode around town, talking about Baltimore, specifically Manny Machado, the Ravens, something I'm very passionate about, the Amazon second headquarters. Yes, please. I think it's a prime spot. And I was reading the Baltimore Sun today, and the headline talked about the Boring Company, which is Elon Musk tunneling company. And supposedly, next month, January of 2018, they're going to start tunneling. So those are my three topics for today. So sit back, relax, and get ready to talk cryptocurrency and my take on it. Thank you. Cryptocurrency. Oh my goodness, you can probably hear all my bitcoins falling out of my pocket right now, but what in the heck is cryptocurrency, right? Well, cryptocurrency, just a level set, is a digital money, effectively. Bitcoin, as an example, is a form of cryptocurrency. So if you hear somebody just say cryptocurrency, no, it's not limited only to bitcoins. Bitcoins is one, there's Litecoin and a few others. And, you know, I heard about bitcoins as a cryptocurrency many years ago, and I didn't think much of it. Now, you know, looking at the price of bitcoins, I'm Googling it right now, in fact, at $16,768 per bitcoin. And if you look back at 2014, they, you know, were hardly anything, or even 2013 when they really started coming out, it would have been amazing to have bought bitcoins. So a couple months ago, when it was like $9,000 or so earlier in the year, I bought some bitcoins. I shouldn't say I bought some bitcoins. I bought a very small percentage of a bitcoin, something along the lines of like 0.00005 or something like that. And I didn't know what the hell to do with it, right? I didn't know how to buy them. I didn't know how to spend them. I didn't know how to hold them. I didn't know how to sell them. So I did some research, and what I want to do is kind of explain this research that I did. everything I'm saying is just one way of actually doing it, right? I mean, you can get into the Bitcoin universe in many, many different ways. Me personally, I started with Gemini. Gemini.com, G-E-M-I-N-I, just like it sounds and how you'd expect to spell it. Gemini.com. Think of that as your marketplace to trade Bitcoins, right? And buy Bitcoins, basically. So it's like if you're buying stock, you might go to E-Trade. If you buy Bitcoins, you might go to Gemini. So you log into Bitcoin, you log into Gemini, you create an account. Admittedly, it's a little scary, right? I mean, you know, you're giving these people a lot of personal information and you actually have to hook it to your bank account. So in my case, I had to actually hook it to Bank of America. And for a moment there, I'm like, God, you know, I'm giving these people direct access to my account. It sounds a little dirty. But I had faith that it was a legitimate business after I did my research. And I do believe it is. So I set up an account, made an initial deposit. They deposited money into my account, like 59 cents or something to verify it. And once I validated my account, I can now instantly trade, buy and sell Bitcoins. So it's just like buying stock. You know, you go into Gemini. You set some rules up like, hey, I want to buy at this price or I want to sell if it falls to this specific price. So I'm logging into my account right now as an example. And on my phone, there's an app called that's like an authorization two-step validation app that you have to download. So when you log in, they're going to send you a code and you have to then actually input it and log in and it validates you. And it looks like just a normal trading desk. You're going to see 24-hour trends, highs, lows, and you can execute trades. All you do is basically say, you know, I want to put a buy in. If the Bitcoin hits this price, buy X dollars. It's important to note, you know, unless you're going to put $16,431 into an account, you'll just be buying a percent of a Bitcoin. Right? You're not going to be buying a whole Bitcoin. So you put your buy in, it will buy it, it puts it in your account, and just like the stock market, as Bitcoins go up and down, your account value will basically go up and down. So that's great. You have Bitcoins, though, in this trade desk, basically. So you can do two things. I'm really just prospecting on Bitcoin, so I'm kind of like a hybrid cryptocurrency person. I seriously doubt I'll be going to a store and using my phone and saying, hey, here's some Bitcoins. I want to buy something. Maybe later down the road. For me, I just want to make a bunch of money off Bitcoins and pull that back out and turn it into, you know, into USD, into actual cash and put it in my bank account. I'm just prospecting. So I've set up my account with some limits. If Bitcoins hit a specific price, sell, so that way I don't lose a bunch of money. And that's pretty much that. But let's just say that you're not doing what I'm doing, you're not prospecting, and you actually want to use Bitcoins as a way to buy and sell things. There's actually places in Baltimore, as an example, where you can, you know, actually go in and say, hey, I want to buy something and use Bitcoins. So, you know, you can basically go in here and get a wallet, you know, a Bitcoin wallet. And what's going to happen with Gemini is I will withdraw my Bitcoins, basically, into my actual wallet. And it's really just like a unique barcoded number. It's a numbering system. I'm using something called Mycelium. Mycelium is my Bit wallet, is my cryptocurrency wallet. So what would happen here is I would actually say I want to receive a Bitcoin and I would give people my Bitcoin address. It's really like a QR code. If you don't use the QR code, it's a really long address associated to me. So the money's not tied, you know, you're not paying Jason Miller, you're paying this random address. So that's why the whole cryptocurrency thing is kind of cool in a sense because, you know, it's kind of an anonymous marketplace of money. The other cool thing is you're taking out a lot of the banks because it's an open marketplace. You're going to see every transaction that's happening. So when you take out the banks, the actual cost to send Bitcoins from America to, say, the UK, you're not going to have a lot of the currency challenges because it's all just an ecosystem. So I would take it out of my Gemini account, put it in my Mycelium Bit wallet, and now the money's sitting in my wallet. Now, the money's in my wallet that I can actually use and go buy things and spend things. So that's kind of the high level overview. I was talking to somebody last week in Austin, Texas. I was there for a business meeting, and she said, "Hey, you know, about 3 years ago at my wedding, I got a really interesting wedding gift. It was Bitcoins." And at the time, I can just imagine her husband and her were kind of chuckling, saying, "WTF, Bitcoins, like, you know, what asshole gave me those?" But I like to think right now they're sending thank you notes to that person saying, "Hey, thanks for the, you know, $500 worth of Bitcoins you gave me, because that's equivalent to, I mean, thousands of dollars at this point. I've doubled my money in, you know, 8 months, maybe even more than doubled it." So it's a cool way to buy, sell, and trade. But, you know, what's my take, okay? We're sitting at the bar, we're just shooting the shit. And you say, "Jason, what do you really think of Bitcoins?" What do I think? I'm not in love with them, to be honest. It feels dirty to me for some reason. It just seems that it's so unregulated, in a sense. It makes me a little nervous. I don't like that I can't just, like, get a Bitcoin without any technology, right? Because, you know, it's kind of cool if you, you know, if you're betting with somebody just to throw some cash on the table. I mean, you know, if Bitcoins really are the currency of the future, it's going to be quite interesting that, you know, we're all going to be sitting playing cards at a casino, instead of throwing money in a pile, in a bowl, that you get to take and rake back to you and get that, you know, sense of ownership. You're just going to be like, "Okay, send me the Bitcoins to my phone." You know, it's going to be interesting to see. But I think cryptocurrency, for everybody, you need to know what it is. I think you should have an account. You should know how to invest it, because if not, you're doing yourself a disservice, right? Whether you like it or not, it is going to have its place in the economy. And when it has its place in the economy, you need to be aware of it. You need to understand how to use it. It doesn't mean you have to love it. And that's my take. You know, just because you're knowledgeable on a subject and know how it works doesn't mean you have to love it. I can use it if I need to. I'm not going to be an outlier if there's a situation where I need to use it. I can speak relatively intelligently about it, and I can make my own decision about how I want to use it. The decision I made is not to physically buy things or exchange money, but simply to invest and prospect on Bitcoins going up and down, and then I withdraw that and put it back into my bank account. And that's why I kind of consider myself more of a hybrid Bitcoin user. So get yourself a Gemini account. Go to Gemini.com, link it to your bank account, and deposit some money. Just start out with $100, whatever. Once it's in there, buy you know, a small percentage of a Bitcoin, and see how it goes up and down. Get yourself a wallet. I use my Selenium on Android. Maybe take $50, put it on there just for fun. You know, there might be an instance where you can pay in Bitcoins and look like an oddball, or look really hip and cool, depending on where it's at, and use the Bitcoins and give it all a go, right? I think it's going to be a fun thing to experience. And don't worry too much about, I would say, the safety of it. I haven't had any issues whatsoever in using Bitcoin. So that's my take on Bitcoins. Next episode, I might be a millionaire. Who knows? Highly unlikely. But in any event, I think the next episode's gonna on my podcast will build upon my my foray into the cryptocurrency economy. So stay tuned, and let's talk Bitcoins again later. But in the meantime, I do want to transition and talk a little bit about Airbnb specifically, because I'm an investor, what I offer and what I don't offer, and why you should consider it. So you spent countless hours browsing the web looking for that perfect vacation getaway, but you hear something, you see something. What's going on, you might ask? You look up and you see a red light. It's a camera in your Airbnb. As creepy as this sounds, if you look at the recent news, you'll see something as recent today, December 14th, about an Airbnb host arrested after finding a hidden camera. 6 hours ago, an Airbnb bed and breakfast had a camera. In Canada, 2 days ago, cameras in the rooms. So this isn't exactly the best, I would say, headlines for potential Airbnb tenants. And it's certainly not something that is normal. But it's very easy in the age of the internet to think any Airbnb you stay at could have these issues. I mean, let's be honest. Any hotel you stay at can have these issues. Airbnb is just getting a bit of that stigma of, you know, you don't know who you're renting from. But when you stay at a hotel, it's probably a franchise owner. You don't know that person either. There's a episode, I think it's Netflix, called Voyeurism or something along those lines, about a guy that bought a motel and built an entire viewing deck above every room. So that's just an example that even what may appear to be a legitimate establishment can have these issues. So I just want to set the record straight related to Airbnb, because I am an Airbnb host. I have 4 properties that I rent through Airbnb. I used to use other services to rent them, and I switched completely to Airbnb about 1.5 years ago. Weekend Oasis, as you might know, is my rental agency company I own. We have properties in the Shenandoah Valley of Virginia and Ocean City, Maryland. Okay, my plug's over. But anyways, you know, I often think people that are staying at these properties really aren't doing their research. And I'm saying that as a host. I oftentimes have people checking in that expect, you know, things that we simply don't provide. So I want to spend just a few moments talking about Airbnb, what I offer, what I don't offer, and why you should consider it. And, you know, I would take the notion of cameras in rooms or cameras at properties out of it. However, I will say, my condo has a camera on the parking lot. My cabin has a camera on the driveway. It is outlined in the rental agreement. It's strictly there for security and the safety of my guest and to monitor inclement weather. No cameras are ever where anybody would stay. They're only facing public roadways. So, you know, I wouldn't worry much about that. But I think you need to really pay attention to who you're renting from. With all respect to these tenants that have these terrible experiences, and I'm not making excuses or victim blaming, as some people would say, when you look at the host in the mugshots and research the host, I mean, it looks like the guy was living in a van down by the river. So I think you just got to step back and sometimes use some common sense and say, I'm entering another person's home. Does this person look trustworthy? Do they have positive reviews from other tenants? And do some Googling of them. This is no excuse that if you stay in a place with cameras, it's your fault. But I think do your due diligence. Make sure you know who you're renting from. What I offer, I'm an investor. I buy properties. I offer short-term stays. It could be 2 nights. It could be longer term, month to month. I offer a clean, comfortable, amenity-filled from a pots and pans, linen standpoint. But when I look at my Airbnb reviews, I'm just shocked by what some people expect. I've had people get angry that I didn't provide an array of spices for them to cook with. So I've modified my language on my website to state I provide no food. I can't provide food. If I keep stuff like that there, who's to say somebody doesn't drop it on the ground, put it back in the bottle, and then you're using it, and the next thing you do, you call me up and say there's a dog hair on it or something terrible. So I've consciously eliminated that. I had people get angry that I don't provide an assortment of conditioner, shampoos, and soaps, even though I state I don't. I would say if you want to have a really positive Airbnb experience, you should really think about who's the host I'm renting from. I did my due diligence. They have positive feedback. The property pictures look good. And I've Googled the property and found some other photos too. I've interacted with the host and they seem knowledgeable and respectful and, you know, like a decent human being. And don't expect a Ritz-Carlton. I have a condo that's $75 a night. It's absolutely fantastic. But people's expectations, I think, sometimes get a little out of line. If you want to be a happy tenant and have a great Airbnb experience, expect to have a place to sleep with some additional perks, like a hotel room. Don't expect to have Bed Bath & Beyond in the bathroom with everything you need for a perfect stay. Actually, Bath and Body Works. I don't even know what I'm talking about. But the place you go and borrow those soaps, and it makes my allergies go into a tailspin because of all the bath bombs they have. But you get my point. I would say just be realistic, level set, look for a good property. But just because you stayed in an Airbnb in Belize that provided amazing services, that doesn't mean it's the norm. So if that's what you expect as a tenant, reach out. And like I said at the beginning, do your due diligence, you know? Make sure you know who the host is. If they have no reviews on Airbnb, don't just book the unit and show up. Send them an email, chat with them, make sure you're comfortable with them, you know? Because you could be walking into a total creep ball that is renting out a bed in his house rigged with cameras. Just do your due diligence. And also realize, I rent entire lodges, cabins, condos. In the headline news, most of what I'm seeing with these negative experiences is people renting a room of a house, and the landlord is physically there. That's not my forte. I would probably never do that, but I'm not a B&B guy either. I don't like just renting a room in a facility being with a bunch of strangers. However, I would just be extra cautious if that's what you're doing at a house versus getting the whole property to yourself, right? Just ask the right questions. Do you do diligence? And just because you had specific standards at another Airbnb, every owner, every investor like myself is different. Read the guidelines. Read the itinerary if you get one and know what to expect. I think everybody should consider Airbnb. You can't touch what I provide at that price with a hotel or a public resort offering. We provide, in some cases, 25 acres of land all to yourself with nobody around. Three bed, three bath. Absolutely stunning. $250 a night, right? So, you know, I wouldn't let these potential concerns that you're reading about prohibit you from truly enjoying what a vacation rental can do for you. So I hope these tips have been useful. I think they're probably things you know, but sometimes what you know, hearing it again, makes you think about it. And if anything, I hope it does that, and I'll provide some clarity around what I offer as an owner. Let's talk around town in Baltimore. This is probably going to be one of my favorite segments every episode because I really want to be able to talk about the good things happening in Baltimore, what's on my mind related to Baltimore, and a little bit of O's talk. I'll probably always have the Let's Go O's theme. I recorded that on my cell phone at a game, and I like that little clip that I have. But a few topics I want to talk about. Yes, I want to talk about Manny Machado. Everybody's talking about him. I want to talk about the Amazon second headquarters, yes please, and the Hyperloop. So let's kick this thing off. Baltimore and Manny Machado, great third baseman. He's came out and said, you know what, I want to play as a position player, shortstop, which is what I used to play and what I kind of learned to play ball with. The O's are shopping him. Yeah, he's a great player, and we don't like to hear that we're having Dan Duquette shop him. But put it in perspective. If you made a great investment, benefited from the investment, and now you can sell that investment, make a lot of money to help you longer term, is that such a bad thing? I think I'm an outlier here. I say shop Manny, get as much money as you can for him. After all, after 1 year, he's going to be free agent anyways. So try to get as much money as you can out of him right now and use that money to invest in pitching. All right, 2014, we made the playoffs. 2012 was a good year. Lots of awesome things. And then we kind of hit a wall in 2016, 2017. And I really want to see a nice rebound. I mean, the energy at the stadium is amazing, or amazing, I should say. Camden Yards is an absolutely magnificent stadium. And if you haven't been, you should go. And I think the O's, you know, are doing what they can with the budgets they have. I mean, we're not in Manhattan or the Bronx, I guess it is. You know, we're not in New York budget. But the passion that we have and what Dan Duquette's doing, I appreciate the guy. He has the owner of a team that gives him a budget. He's doing the best he can with the budget, but you go on these forums and you read and you talk to other people, and they say he needs to get pitching. And we're like, okay, so he's gonna make some cash from an investment. No. He can't get rid of Manny Machado. He has to keep Manny. He has to keep Scope. He has to keep all the players, but he needs to get pitching. Well, it's just this shit doesn't happen like that, right? I mean, tough times require tough decisions. In order to continue to get ahead, he's gonna have to get some more money in the piggy bank. And Manny Machado is a golden nugget that people want and will pay for. So my stance, shop him. If the price is right, let him go. He's already been very open about not wanting to play third base. And I think he would be more valuable as a trade versus what he's going to do not getting that money. So I guess what I mean is the money we're going to get, I think, to get a pitcher will far outweigh going into the 2018 season with the current pitching staff. So I just wanted to throw it out there. I'm sure I'm going to get tons of hate mail, but I've been an O's fan my whole life. I love what they're doing, and I'm also a business guy. And my business sense is shop and make some money and move on. Let's talk about Amazon. You know, Amazon has tons and tons and tons of, warehouses and distribution centers in Maryland. But where are they going to actually put the second headquarters? They put an RFP out, a request for proposal out to lots of different, basically anybody. And every city under the sun responded. Now, the funny thing is, I would say some of the cities obviously didn't read the RFP because the RFP requires lots and lots of things. Areas like Miami, Boston, New York, they've all been mentioned. Mid-sized cities like Raleigh, Pittsburgh, Austin. But everything's really focusing on the East Coast. It's got to be the East Coast. The East Coast is the best coast, in my opinion. But you have the port in Baltimore, which is huge. Yeah, it's not going to have knowledge workers using it, but it's going to allow them to be closer to distribution centers on the East Coast, where those knowledge workers are probably managing and running analytics on the shipments. And they also, Baltimore is an hour from Philly, an hour from D.C., 2 hours and 10 on the train, the Acela to Manhattan. And I think that's a really good central location for them to actually be. But when you read the reports, right now, you know, there's a Forbes article that came out a month and a half ago that's saying Atlanta is showing up on every list as a possible second headquarters. Austin is showing up. And I was just in Austin. Let me tell you, I was underwhelmed. I've been there a few times, and I always want to love it, and I never can love it. It's like a miniature Williamsburg in New York City in Austin without any real character, in my opinion. Toronto, I mean, I thought they wanted a site in the U.S. Last I looked, Toronto wasn't in the United States. Pittsburgh has shown up on a lot of lists. Not a bad location, I have to say. I've spent some time in Pittsburgh and was pleasantly surprised. Boston. I mean, what are they going to pay these people? Hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars to live there? I mean, come on. You know, Boston doesn't need it. They got enough going on. Baltimore needs it. The city needs it. Okay, look at what Kevin Plank is doing for the city. Great things. We have good infrastructure that's being built, a lot of investment. Governor Larry Hogan, who I love, has gave tremendous tax incentives for them. We have quality knowledge workers and lots of people in finance. You have great banks that are located here. You have good retail located here. Phenomenal transportation. Oh, and by the way, when we're talking about around town, segue into the Hyperloop. Elon Musk has already got approval to build the tunnel and to start tunneling for the Hyperloop. So that's going to give that transportation aspect. So Amazon, if you're listening, and I know you're not, but if you are, Baltimore is a place you want to be. Baltimore is a place you need to be. Don't get confused by these other cities. Baltimore is here for you, and we're looking for you. So I truly hope in episodes to come, I'm talking about how Baltimore landed it. But let's get back to what I was saying a moment ago about the Hyperloop, right? So the Boring Company. Yes, I'm one of the 33,000 people that bought one of his $20 hats. But Elon Musk Thank Tesla, the CEO. That's his tunneling company. So I was, you know, woke up this morning, and like I always do, I read my, you know, my Feedly subscriptions, and I read that starting in January, he's going to begin boring with an exit near Camden Yards. It's starting in Maryland, which is awesome. So you're going to be able to get to, you know, DC in 20 minutes or so. So it's going to be pretty exciting how all this is going to pan out, because I'm a firm believer that the metropolitan area, being New York, Philly, Baltimore, and DC, is all just going to be one big metropolis, right? I firmly believe that this is a great way to move massive amounts of people, and it's a really important aspect. I mean, I could be in New York City incredibly quickly, or I could, you know, go down to DC in 20 minutes. So it makes a lot of sense, but I get frustrated because I was reading on LinkedIn and somebody said, who would use this? Like, this is a joke. Like, why did anybody do this? So I'm like, okay, where's this guy? Well, he lives in Georgia. So first of all, he doesn't even know anything about using the Northeast Regional Transportation System on a regular basis. I go to Manhattan probably every other week at least. All right. Amtrak is okay. But 2 hours and 40-some minutes on the regional, the Northeast Regional 170, I'm usually sitting on, less than ideal. You pay a lot more money. You get the Acela Express. I can get there in 2 hours and 15, 2 hours and 20 minutes. Manageable. But to get there for a 9 a.m. meeting, I got to leave at 5:30, drive to the train station, get on the train, blah, 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 blah. If I could get there in 44 minutes, as of saying, with the Hyperloop, game-changing. I mean, you're going to have people that will actually live in Baltimore and work in New York City, or live in New York City and do business on a regular basis in Baltimore and D.C. You know, there's some drawbacks to that, right? I mean, it's going to make Baltimore real estate skyrocket, because relative to D.C., relative to Philly, and relative to New York City, Baltimore is cheaper. But I'll tell you, when I moved from Manhattan to Baltimore, my wife and I was shocked that the cost of living wasn't as substantially less as I thought. But I only see upside to this. I mean, yeah, there's going to be some eminent domain. There's going to have to be people that maybe have to give up a few things. But what he's looking to do is going under a state highway. The problem getting to DC is part of the BWI Parkway, the Baltimore-Washington Parkway, is federal. So he's getting state approval, but now he has to get federal approval. So the good news is we're going to have this Hyperloop, and I don't think it's going to be, you know, forever and ever until we get it. So I say the Boring Company, get the boring, get this bad boy done, ignore the haters, because they're probably going to be the first ones in line to actually use it. Amazon, I can't wait to see your second headquarters in Baltimore. And Baltimore, my O's, Manny Machado, I love you. I got your baseball bat hanging in my office right now that you signed for me. But you know what? You did your time. Let's make the O's some money in the market and go get some pitching. So that's it for episode one. I talked about what my podcast was. We talked a little bit about cryptocurrency. I blabbed about Airbnb. In my Around Town segment, Baltimore, Manny Machado, Amazon, second headquarters on the Hyperloop. So stay tuned to episode two. I want to talk pizza a little bit. I've been going to Chicago a lot for business. And I want to love deep dish. I really do. But I don't. I also want to talk about the process of getting my real estate license. I'm not going to do this full time, but for my investments, it's good. But I want to give anybody looking to get a license a little bit of insight about what it is. And a lot of other things, including the regular Around Town segment. And I'm going to be talking about what it's been like living in the suburbs of Baltimore County, and some of the funny things that I have to deal with on a regular basis. So that's it. Thank you for listening. I hope I didn't bore you to death. If I did and you listened, my man. And I'll leave you with a track that I found called Blow the Man Down by the Midshipmen Glee Club. It's a free song I can use off of YouTube Audio Library. So I don't know what the man blowing him down means, but maybe it's the man as corporate America and they want to blow him down. Enjoy.
thy stream, beware.